Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to this week's Living Torah. And also, if you happen to catch this before you have your Thanksgiving dinner, happy Thanksgiving. I'm probably looking at a number of you that are watching after that, of course, as you wait until Friday night or Saturday, some Shabbat sometime, and you're still trying to get over Thanksgiving dinner. Well, I can tell you, by faith, I'm probably doing the same thing. Of course, it's Wednesday as I'm taping, so I'm looking forward to Thanksgiving tomorrow. Here we are, a little different setting today. This is was the base camp for the series that we just finished called Torah is Life, Volume 3, and it is a reality. Of course, this is still an empty case. I'm looking to rectify that on Monday when the DVDs are shipped back to us. They are in duplication right now, and we should have them pretty soon. So this is available right now on the website. You can go there, and the price is $36. That includes shipping. And this is what we've just finished on tents and sleeping bags and knives and flashlights on fire building, our fire pit out here in the front that I've we actually got a fire going there. And it's a lot of fun. Hygiene, safety, number of different things. So go onto the website, you can order one of those. Interesting enough, in the Haftorah portion this week, if we were going by the Ashkenazi, which one are we going by the way? There's two, of course, there's never, you can just never have everybody coming together for anything, it seems like. So in the Torah portions, of course, the Haftorah, it depends on if you're going by the Ashkenazi or the Sephardic. If we were going by the Sephardic, we would actually be reading this week. And if you're going by the Ashkenazi, just back up a couple of verses and we would actually be reading the scriptures out of Hosea that say, I will cause you to live in tents, as in the appointed festivals. And so I just kind of found that fun that it was this week in the Haftorah portion would be right there on those scriptures that this whole series is dedicated to. See if my tent's going to hold up again today. We had some interesting weather during the time of taping this. So before I take the tent down and everything and clean up from that taping series, that I just come down here and we'll tape here today. I want to thank GLC, God's Learning Channel. I was with them yesterday and was taping there. That will be broadcast now Thanksgiving night at 8 o'clock Central Standard Time, or daylight. What are we on? I think we're on the anti-Messiah time right now, but 8 o'clock, whatever time it is, 8 o'clock in Midland, Texas and Seminole, Oklahoma. You need to adjust from there, and you can always go on their website, find out their schedule. But it was a great time. I'm so thankful to Al and Tommy Cooper and to the whole staff of GLC. They're very, very cordial, helped out in so many ways. And we have almost 2 hours of videotape that will be available in various formats after it's broadcast. We'll be trying to make that available to you guys in other ways. It was just really kind of, 2 hours of condensed teachings. And I felt like it went real well. To Tommy and to Al, to the 50 people they have going to Israel, may the Father bless you. They're leaving this Monday for a trip, their yearly trip to Israel. I think this is 20-something times that they've been. And so may he go before you as you go into the land. Also, this week is a new week for us. Those of you that are familiar with Eddie Chumney's 5-minute update that is put up on waytozion.org? I can't remember. One of the two. Way to Zion is the email address is Dumrod. So Dumrod, who is actually Jason, has been so gracious to put a number of our teachings up, and now is going to be taking these audio and possibly even video. I think right now it's going to be just audio and links to the video, and he's going to be putting those on the Way to Zion website. So it's just amazing what can be done today in getting this awesome word of Torah out. Before we go into the Torah portion, I want to go back to Thanksgiving for a moment and talked a little bit about this on GLC. Why is it? Thanksgiving, of course, we have Easter, next year, and we have Christmas coming up. But, and those are just difficult times for family. especially if you have family, like most of us do, that don't observe Torah. They observe these pagan holidays. And but Thanksgiving, we can still come together. Why? I believe it is because the root of Thanksgiving is in the time of the Feast of Sukkot, the time of the Feast of Tabernacles. You know, let's look back. These pilgrims were trying they were desiring to be set free from religious persecution. They were looking to, I think the history bears this out, they were looking to live out all of Scripture, including the Torah. And they were led, literally led to this place called America, and their time with the Indians, and of course, this politically correct thing that they had a dinner to which they gave thanks to the Indians. No, they didn't. I believe that they were, in that day, they were observing the Feast of Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles. You know, let's look at it. Okay, we have a festival that has a clean animal, for one thing. We can have turkey there, way too much of it most of the time. But it's all about harvest. Well, that's the Feast of Tabernacles. And then we have this dish that is tradition to be served at the time of Thanksgiving. And it's called succotash. It is, you know, corn and peas and whatever you want to put in that thing. And it is the grains and the fruits and vegetables that have been harvested during that fall time. And it is put into this dish called succotash. Succotash. Makes one of those things in life that makes you go, So, you know, with that, that's kind of the history of it. And so I think the reason that we today are able to sit down with family that may not be on the same page with us as far as the Torah goes is because that is a festival that still has its roots, at least, its foundation in the Torah, in the Feast of Tabernacles. These other festivals have these other holidays, the other pagan feasts like Christmas and Easter, there's nothing there. It's a basically a pagan feast, pagan holiday that was transformed into something, put a little religious coating on it and call it holy. And you and I, of course, we know better than that. So we're going to go to Genesis chapter 28, verse 10, through chapter 32, verse 3. Let's see what time it is so I know when to quit here. Hosea chapter 12, verse 13, through chapter 14, verse 10. And Joshua, almost finished with Joshua. Joshua chapter 19 through 21. Now, we start out this week in Genesis chapter 28. And we're going to be, of course, looking at the life of this man, Jacob. And it says that he went out from Beersheba, and he came to a certain place, stayed the night, and the infamous Jacob's Ladder, as he laid down, he camped, and of course we talked about that, the night that he was camping with his head on a pillow. We talked about that in our Volume 3 of the Torah's Life series. Now, most of us are not really ready for the pillow to be a rock yet. We've got a little ways to go. But he laid down there, and as he did, as he slept, he had a vision, and that vision was of a ladder. And that on that ladder was these angels that were going up and coming down. And it says that suddenly Adonai was standing there in front of him and said to him, "I am Adonai, your Elohim. I am Adonai, the Elohim of Abraham, your grandfather, and the Elohim of Isaac. The land on which you are lying, I will give to you and your descendants." Now, this is a place of revelation. This place of Jacob's Ladder. I've been up in to the Shel HaShamron Hotel in Samaria, specifically outside of Ariel, and it's a place they have a biblical garden there. And they have a depiction of Jacob and Jacob's Ladder. And I've sat there, you know, a number of mornings as the sun would be rising at jet lag. You can't sleep in the morning. So be up there watching the sunrise in the same area that Jacob was there. But it says that I am the Elohim, the God, of your grandfather Abraham and I'm also the Elohim of your father Isaac. Now, at this point, remember, he is the Elohim, the God of Abraham and of Isaac, but not of Jacob yet. You know, the account could have ended right there. Jacob could have gone on his own way, and things could have been a little different. But, of course, we're privy to being able to read the whole account in just a few minutes. But the father comes to him, and he says this. He says, I am the Elohim of your grandfather and of your father, but unto you I am going to give this land, just like I promised to them. He knew, he understood that Jacob was going to have to go through some things in his life until he was going to be real, to the person of Jacob. I call that a crisis of faith, that he was going to go out and Jacob was literally going to have to test the father. Well, you know, he's up for that. He's okay with that, because it says in verse 20, Yaakov took this vow. He looked right in the, you know, in the eyes of Elohim after this vision. He said, if God will be with me, he will guard me on this road that I am traveling, giving me bread to eat and clothes to wear so that I return to my father's house in peace. Then Adonai will not only be the Elohim of Abraham and of Isaac, but he will also be my Elohim. And this stone, which I have set up as a standing stone, will be his house. And of everything you give to me, I will faithfully return one-tenth to you. Now, he understood. He had been watching the faith of his grandfather and the faith of his father lived out before him. But he had not accepted that faith as his own. He had to go through some times that were going to be his. A crisis of faith. And you know, I don't see anywhere that the father says, oh no, I'm not up to the task. I don't see anywhere that he became nervous. He said, oh no, wait a minute, Jacob, don't do that. Don't put me to the test. Don't give me these conditions. Jacob, if you'll just say yes to me today, then I can save you from all the things that are going to be coming upon you. Jacob, I know what the future is going to be if you go to Laban's house. So don't go there. Instead, how about just, you know, you just receive me as your redeemer today, Jacob, and I'll save you from all the heartache. Instead, the father basically looks at Jacob and says, okay, it's a deal. You go from this place. I've already made the promise to you. Jacob, I already know that you're going to return unto me. See, he already knew the scriptures out of Proverbs that said, train up a child in the way he should go. When he is old, he will not depart from it. You know, those are not, the book of Proverbs was already in the heart of the father at that moment in time. And so he understood that Jacob needed to go forth and test him in some things. And he knew, of course, knowing the end from the beginning or out of the beginning, he knew that he would eventually come back. In this account is a great message to us, and that is regarding our children, regarding our youth. You know, especially in this day, folks, we live in a day in which everything out there is calling them away from the scriptures, away from our way of life. You know, just for our youth to be trying to eat kosher today or live by the biblical festivals, or it's just difficult for all of us, especially for them. And there is a tendency today, I see, and I've seen this in Christianity, I see this continuing on for those of us that are searching out the Torah, that we want to shelter them too much. There comes a point in time that, you know, we need to have more faith in our Father than we have in our own skills. We have to allow them to go forth and start to make some of their own decisions. If all we're doing through their life is making their decisions for them, what's going to happen? One day they're going to be on their own. It's just going to happen. There's no way that you can keep this from happening, because either they're going to grow up and move out of the house, or they're going to stay in your house, which is, I think, an even greater problem. And one day you're going to die. They're going to be without you at some point in time. And if you and I have not shown them how to make the right decisions, if we have not allowed this crisis of faith to happen in their lives, if the God that we serve has never been transferred to the one that they serve because they have made the decision to do so, what are they doing? They have no faith. They have a faith in our God. This was very clear to me as growing up with a grandmother that was a woman of faith. You know, she was constantly telling us about His goodness and His provision in her life. And we saw it demonstrated right in front of us, myself and my cousin. We saw it demonstrated in front of us the same as Jacob saw the faith of Isaac demonstrated right in front of him. But the old saying is that God does not have grandchildren. He only has children. And there came a time in my life, and many of you can relate to this, there came a time in my life that I had to transfer that faith from it being the faith of the God of my grandmother to it being the faith of Him in my own life. I had to go through a crisis of faith. Now, for some people, this is a very easy thing. It just, you know, they just kind of tend to go from one to the other. No big deal. For me, it wasn't. It was a lot of years that were very similar to Jacob. But in the end, what happened in Jacob's life? We will read that later in, I believe it's next week's Torah portion, where he came back and everything was okay. Now, Jacob understood, it wasn't just that he was going out, you know, and saying, oh, well, I'm just going to take this little trip. Jacob knew what he was doing. See, there was this revelation of who Adonai Elohim was and desired to be in his life. We see that in the scriptures that we read. But it had to go from just the revelation of who he was to being the personal redeemer in his life. This is something that happens through time. You know, we do a disservice to our children when we say at a real young age, well, you just need to receive Messiah. And then kind of leave it at that. And that's all they ever go through. You know, our youth, they're going to go through some things. They're going to go through some difficulties. And they may, you know, prayerfully, hopefully, they will come to a revelation of who He is at an early age. That's our prayer for them. But you can't take the experiences that I can't take the experiences that I have had through the last 20-something years since I came to Messiah. I can't take those experiences and somehow, you know, put a USB port into my children or into anybody else, in fact. I can't download them into somebody else's life. They have to, each one of us has to go through this crisis of faith for ourselves. And I can really tell you, it doesn't take me long to be around a person to find out if they're serving the God of their mother or the God of their father, or if this one called Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh has become real to them. He understood the principles, because it says that I will faithfully return 1/10 to you. He understood that there was going to be a commitment that was going to be made from him, that in order for this contract, this covenant that is being offered to him on this day, through this vision, through this dream, through this experience, in order for this contract to be consummated, to be ratified, there was going to take a faith without works is dead. It goes right over to the words of Yaakov. There was going to take something on his part to prove out his faith, that it was not going to be an empty faith of words, but that it was going to be a faith that produced actions. And so we see that he basically put him to the test here, and he said, okay, you are the Elohim of my father and of my grandfather, and here's the deal. And if you follow through on your part of the deal, when I come back to this place, then I'm going to follow through on my part of the deal. We'll see that as we go through. And then we read these words of the Torah this week, the journey of one man, as he goes through and he meets, again, Mr. Nose Ring, Laban. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go back a couple weeks in the archives. As he meets the love of his life, Rachel, and then meets one who would, we'll find out in the end, what his true attitude became, and who really, in the end, was the love of his life, as he also will meet Leah. And the account of Jacob and his walk and everything that happened to him, you know, it's a testimony. If he had been in a church that I attended years ago, on Wednesday night was testimony night. I still like to have those. Sometimes we do that here in Seminole at our congregation. We'll have some testimonies. And we need to do that more, in fact. But, you know, if it had been that he was attending a congregation there in Laban's hometown, that he would have been able to stand up on Wednesday nights throughout this time period, and this would have been his testimony. He would have one day testified about how he had met Rachel, and how he had come to know Laban. And he would have, at some point in time, testified about the goodness of the Almighty in his life to bring to him a woman that it would be later in life that he would really come to understand how much of a blessing she really was. Now, in this account here, we go through, and first of all, I want to give you the gospel according to Leah. Now, Leah is the unloved, as we see in chapter 29, verse 31. And she was fertile, extremely, while Rachel remained childless. And Leah conceived, and she gave birth to four sons here. And we see those sons as Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Yehuda. And in these four boys, we have the gospel of Leah. You know, I've been around people who said, well, the gospel is, you know, is only preached over here in Matthew, from Matthew and to the right of there. No, it's all the way through the book. You just have to look for it. You know, the same as we found in Genesis, what was it, the end of Genesis chapter 5. We found the gospel according to the genealogy of Noah. Well, here we have the gospel according to Leah. When we see these four sons and the names of these sons, the name of Reuben is a son. The name of Shimon is hearing. The name of Levi means joining. And the name of Yehuda means praise. So Leah literally says this, through a son, I will hear the word of Adonai. I will be joined to him, and I will give him praise. Wow. It's pretty amazing that, you know, just through the names of these four boys, that every time that she went out and she called these four boys, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, come in here. Every time she did that, she was literally yelling out the gospel. It is through a son. His name is Yeshua. That we will be taught to hear and to obey the words of the Almighty. And through that hearing and obeying, we are able to be joined to him and to bring forth praise. I don't know about you. That's just awesome. Well, it goes on, and we get into this. Oh, it's a comedy. It's this dysfunctional family. You know, people ask today, why is Christianity been so dysfunctional? Why is the Messianic movement so dysfunctional? Why is Judaism just so dysfunctional? Well, the nut didn't fall far from the tree. That's why. I jokingly tell people that nut didn't fall far. All it did is it kind of rolled down the trunk and just landed right there within a few inches and planted itself pretty firmly, because this thing becomes an absolute dysfunctional comedy act. To give you an idea of it, and of course I have the some of you that are just joining us this week probably for the first time because of God's Learning Channel, unashamed commercial message. I have about 5 hours of CDs on this section of the Torah called the 12 Tribes. And it just, I'm not going to go into the whole thing, but it's one you need to get. It's just, it goes in and explains, you know, why do you act like you do? And why do I act like I do? And why does this other person over here act like they do? Well, it's all in here. It's all prophesied thousands of years ago. So go to the website and order that one while you're getting the Torah's Life video series. My favorite one in this comedy act is in chapter 30, verse 14. And it talks about the mandrakes. You know, please give me some of your son's mandrakes so that I can be fertile. And she answers, isn't it enough that you have taken away my husband? Do you have to take away my son's mandrakes too? Rachel said, very well, in exchange for your son's mandrakes, sleep with him tonight. Then Yaakov came in from the field in the evening. Leah went out to meet him and said, you have to come and sleep with me because I've hired you with my son's mandrakes. And then we have Issachar, which is the tribe of the donkey, the tribe of the hired servant, which that goes into a whole teaching itself. But I just think it's hilarious. I don't know about you. You know, I spend a lot of windshield time just driving down the road from one place to another. I was, about 1,000 miles or so in the last couple of days going down to Midland, Texas. And sometimes on the road, it's kind of fun just to put yourself in the place of these people. You know, imagine what it was like. Jacob comes in from his work in the field. He pulls into the driveway and he sees these two women. He sees Rachel and Leah. And they're kind of standing there, you know, with their arms folded, not looking at each other. These other little boys are kind of around there. And we've gotten into now the slave girls and everybody's having kids here, except for Rachel, of course. And so, you know, Jacob comes into the driveway and he looks up at these women and these children, and he just has to be kind of put his head on the steering wheel of the cart or whatever he was, and go, what now? What have they come up with today? Oh no. And he just doesn't know what in the world he is going to be finding on a daily basis when he comes home. And this is the day. These mandrakes, this is not male ducks, okay? This is an aphrodisiac. I won't go into that because we've got a mixed audience here that watches. But, you know, you can explain it to the however you want to explain it. So, but, you know, in the end, we've got Issachar out of here. But to me, it's just, you know, it's just a... It gives me hope, really, that I look around us today and I see leaders fighting with each other and these little petty things that happen from time to time. And I see that, you know, in church we used to, there was splits over carpet color and should we have communion cups of plastic or of glass and the Messianic Hebrew Roots movement, you know, we've kind of grown up from that. And, you know, what do we have? We have splits over, well, where should we have an Israeli flag on the platform or not? Or, you know, is it too much dance or not enough dance? Or is the music too Jewish or not Jewish enough? You know, oh, we've really grown up a lot, haven't we? Maybe not. We still have the same dysfunction, but it was through the dysfunction that the family was in the end. We'll see that as we go through, and we'll have to get all the way to the end of Genesis, but we'll see that in the end the dysfunction was brought into unity through tribulation. Isn't that a prophetic word for us today? Now, finally, Jacob says, hey, it's time to be released from the bondage of Laban. And so, you know, Laban's a guy that's, you know, there was a reason why he didn't leave with Abraham. It's because he's an idol worshiper. You know, he was worshiping rocks and little wooden things and trees and sticks and stones and, you know, whatever he could find along the way to worship. Well, he just decided to worship it. The only thing he didn't do is worship the one true and living Elohim that created him. Instead, he was worshiping the creation instead of the creator. You know, he would see a tent pole like this and he'd say, oh, I need to bow down and worship that because it's holding my tent up. Instead of saying, thank you, Father, for giving me tent poles to hold my tent up, which is another provision that you have given to me. And so Laban is, you know, he's worshiping all these things. And, well, the influence of Laban is on his family. And in fact, it's on his family through the person of Rachel. And this is something that that Isaac never quite got a hold of. He didn't understand. He, you know, love is blind, right? Well, it's also kind of stupid sometimes. I have seen so-called, quote-unquote, love. I've seen it do some silly things to both men and women to make decisions that are absolutely insane. And it was affecting Jacob kind of the same way because it was blinding him to some things that were in the life of Rachel. Now understand, Rachel has grown up under the influence and authority of Laban. She has seen, just like Jacob saw and was told about the provision of the Almighty in the life of his father and grandfather. Well, Laban has these little false gods. And so he may go out one day and pray to one, you know, set it up there. You know, you got, it's just funny. You take these little gods, you set them up there, and then you pray to them. And they can't go anywhere, so you have to put them back down. But he would pray to this one for a good harvest, and it happened that that was a good harvest that year. And so he would tell Rachel, you know, we got a good harvest this year. We got rain. We got all these things. And it's because of this little stick. Right. Well, Rachel bought into it. And so when it's time for Rachel to leave with Jacob, what does she do? She's got a choice here. Let's see. Now, Jacob, my husband, has been telling me of all the things that his God has done in his life. And on the other hand, though, I've seen that my father, he's told me about the things that his gods are doing in his life. Which one do I go with? Do I go with my father's gods or do I go with my husband's gods? Ah, I know. you know, being a little deceptive, as we will find that she is, she decided to play both sides and kind of ride the fence here. She said, tell you what I'll do. I'll just, you know, I'll go with the God of my husband, but just in case he doesn't come through, I'll have plan B, and I'll have these little gods of my father. And off she goes. Jacob, because of the blindness of his love, he never saw that. He never saw that in his wife. And we see that, of course, Laban comes back into the picture, Mr. Nose Ring. And this, people that manipulate, they can come up with some of the greatest things to say. It's really something. It says in over in chapter 31, verse 27, when Laban caught up with Jacob, why did you flee in secret and deceive me and not tell me? I would have sent you off with joy and singing to the music of tambourines and lyres. You'd have sent him off with lyres, all right, but it wouldn't have been those kind of lyres. You didn't even let me kiss my sons and daughters goodbye. What a stupid thing to do. So what does Mr. Deception do? Is he puts guilt upon Jacob. There's a good thing to think about right there. I have it in my power to do you harm. Right. But the God of your father spoke to me last night and said, okay, now we're getting religious here, okay? This thing is great. I mean, Laban is, he's something else. He's what we would call, he's a sport model, because he starts out with a guilt trip, and then he insults Jacob, and then he brings in, you know, if nothing else works, bring in the God told me one. You know, I had a conversation with somebody a few days ago, and they said, you know, they were talking to somebody, and this person had said, well, you know, God told me this. And it was totally against Scripture. So this friend of mine emailed this person all of these Scriptures, basically debunking what this person had said. And so what did this friend of mine get back in the email? Not a single Scripture. Only a, well, I know that, but God told me. Okay. How do you fight with that? You ever had somebody said, well, I know that, but God told me. Talk about the ultimate name dropper here. And he did this, you know, but you're the God of your father. Notice that? Not my God, because the reason I'm here is to find my little gods. He said, be careful that you don't say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. Granted that you had to leave because you longed so deeply to be with your father's house, more condemnation. And then we get to the heart of the matter. But why did you steal my gods? Laban has not come out to kiss anybody. He hasn't come out with a debate over anything. He's come out because he's lost his false gods. It really comes down to that, you know? And so there's where we see the deception in the end of Rachel, as instead of repenting. And we're going to cover this more in depth in the coming next couple of weeks. But instead of repenting to her husband and saying, Jacob, this is what I did. Instead of that, she hid those false gods from Jacob. Now, I guess it comes to the, you got to ask a question here. Did Jacob know? Did he have an idea of where those false gods were? But because of his infatuation over Rachel, he kind of slid something under the table. You know, we do that. We do that with each other. I've seen people do that with their children specifically, because they, that blindness that we can get, we start to cover up for people, and it's not a good thing in any situation. Now, chapter 32, we're going to get to the end of this Torah portion with Jacob. And it says, early in the morning, Laban got up, kissed his sons and daughters, just what he wanted to do, and blessed them. And then Laban left and returned to his own place and kept searching for his false gods. I added that part. Yaakov went on his way, and the angels of Elohim met him. Then Yaakov saw him. When Yaakov saw him, he said, this is Elohim's camp, and called the place Two Camps. He's not out of the woods yet. He's on his way back home, but he still has a major battle in front of him, and that's one we're going to discuss next week. But we're going to go over for the rest of our time here. We're going to go over to Joshua, of course, and we're going to be in Joshua 19 through 21. We're going to be leaving Joshua next week. This has gone way too fast. Now, in Joshua, we see the continued division of the land, and of course, this is a partial fulfillment of the words that were given to Jacob. But we go over to, I want to go all the way to the end of these words of Joshua. In Joshua chapter 21, starting in verse 41, is, so Adonai gave Israel all the land which he swore to give to their ancestors, and they took possession of it and lived in it. Then Adonai gave them rest all around, according to everything he had sworn to their ancestors. Not a man from their enemies stood against them. Adonai handed all their enemies over to them. Not one good thing that Adonai had spoken of to the house of Israel failed to happen. It all took place. In the life of Joshua, they divided the land up between them. And it says that there was a time that they had rest from their enemies. I think these are good words to us today. Because with all the talk, and you know, anybody that's listened to this broadcast at all knows that I talk about it a lot, of the world situation that's happening around us. We talk about the greater exodus. We talk about the tribulation and all of these things that are coming upon us, I believe, pretty fast. And we need to keep our eyes on this, that there was a time in which all the promises that the Father had made to Abraham, to Isaac, to Joshua, to Moses, to each of the people that we've read about so far in the Scripture, there was a time in which those promises came to pass. Well, not totally. They've never totally come to pass. We've seen a partial fulfillment of these promises. But I believe that it is for a different generation. In fact, I believe it's for our generation to see all of the promises come to pass. There's coming a time in which all of his enemies will be defeated, and we will be in the land, and that will be the time of ultimate rest. The time of ultimate Shabbat, it will be the time called the millennium. But between now and then, it looks a whole lot more like Laban and Esau than it does the time of Joshua, does it not? And with that, I want to spend the next few minutes that I have talking about we're going to be entering into the month of December here in just a few moments, in just a few days. December for all of us is a difficult time. Unless you happen to be one of the blessed ones that your whole family is on board with you, and you know, you're definitely not the majority here. You don't even count as a remnant yet. But the time of December is a very difficult time for most people. We try our best to figure out how in the world do we get through this time. You know, people want to give you presents. Well, you know, a person that's not observing Hanukkah. Well, give me a Hanukkah present. Let's don't do Christmas presents. Let's do Hanukkah present. They don't know what a Hanukkah present is. They don't know what Hanukkah is, you know? We're playing games. And what do? I wish I had all the answers. I really do. I don't. We've got parents. Some of these parents are very old. They're not going to change. We got family. They're not going to change. It's obvious. what do we do? Throw it all in the trash? I don't. Every person's going to have to deal with this, and in their own way. I can tell you, as for me and my house, we don't do any Christmas trees around this place. You know, I like to be out of town during part of the time of Hanukkah, and you know, it's going to be a time that we're going to try our best to once again, in front of our family, live out this wonderful time of Hanukkah. Next week's Torah, or next week's Haftorah, next week's reading in Joshua, let me say it like that, will be the incredible words of Joshua when he said, "As for me and my house, we've made a decision to serve Yahweh." That's the attitude we need to have. And how that works out in each one's life without compromise, but yet without alienating everybody. It's easy for me. I can alienate, especially when it comes to some family members. I can alienate so fast and almost with a little bit of pleasure. I have to be careful of that. We all have a tendency sometimes to do that. We can, and neither side of that is right. Neither the pendulum swing of compromise nor the pendulum swing of alienating, neither one of those are right. And we're going to each have to come to a decision. But the decision should be that as for me and my house, we're going to come to the place, we're going to show through our actions that we have come to the place that we will not tolerate the false gods of Laban. You know, this year, Hanukkah starts on the 11th or 12th of December. I've got a CD on it. I'm not going to go into all of it, but to me, as I said to Al Cooper yesterday on God's Learning Channel, that it's like Independence Day. It's like Veterans Day, rather, I guess would be a better way to say it. That Hanukkah is a time that we honor the people that have stood up for Torah. It's funny in a strange way. It's not really funny, but you know, for most part today, the Hanukkah has become the Jewish holiday. Well, the only place Hanukkah is mentioned is in the scriptures, in the book of John. You know, Yeshua was the one, he entered into the city and it was Hanukkah. He celebrated Hanukkah, probably because it was, you know, it was the day that he was conceived, I believe. So, but with all that, this time of Hanukkah is a time that many secular Jewish people have used it just as a substitution for Christmas. And I know a lot of Messianics that have too. You know, oh, let's do presents for 8 days. That's not getting us anywhere. Let's go back and see that there are people today that are observing the festival of Hanukkah that are not Torah observant. What is Hanukkah about? Hanukkah is about a time in which people gave their lives to defend the observance of Torah. If there's anybody that should be observing this time, it's us. It's those of us who are observing or pursuing the Torah. We should be the ones that Hanukkah should be exciting to us. I've got a 6-foot-tall menorah. I'll be lighting that thing, you know, right on our front porch. When we're in Florida during part of Hanukkah, we'll take a small Hanukkah and we'll light that thing. You know, it's a part of our lives. We're honoring those who have gone before us, who would have refused to put up a Christmas tree, who would have given. I mean, Judas Maccabees would have given his life. If told to put up a Christmas tree, he would have given his life not to do so. I think there's a great message to us that with this Torah portion, we're coming into the time of December. Each one of us is going to be making choices of, will we follow the God of Abraham, Isaac, and in the next portion, Torah portion, Jacob? Or are we going to continue to walk in the lies and falsehoods, the useless things of Jeremiah chapter 16, verse 19, of what has been handed down to us for centuries, the little false gods. You know, I guess that's a decision that each person has to make. But it's a decision that each one of us will also give an account for one day. We're going to read in the coming weeks how these false gods, these little idols, little sticks and stones and whatever, they would cost Rachel her life. But it would be through that Jacob would really, his eyes would be open in that day, and in that day he would be shown to appreciate the one who really loved him. You know, maybe if we will do the same thing with the false gods, oh, we don't have sticks and stones around, do we? No, we don't have little idols and trinkets and little fat people with big bellies. What do we have? Well, we have our checkbook, credit cards, sports. I know a lot of folks that sports is a false god, because when it comes down to it, I've seen it. When it comes down to it, folks, I've seen many, many people that will choose the ball game over the Torah study, just the way it happens. Entertainment. You know, we live in a day of kind of the same. Hey, Bear. We live in a day very similar to the time that the Maccabees were called. It was a time of Antiochus Epiphanes. It was a time in which Alexander the Great had conquered the then known world, and he did so through such things. He didn't do so through military conquest. He did it through such things as sports and entertainment. Is Alexander the Great the false Messiah, the enemy? Is he doing the same thing today, destroying our lives through the same tactics that he's used for many years? Maybe the greatest message of Hanukkah is for each of us to spend some time praying and really allowing the Father to search out our own lives, asking Him, where do we turn to? In times of trial and tribulation, in times of difficulty, where do we turn to? Are we turning to Him? Or are we doing no better than the same thing that Rachel did? Always having plan B. Yeah, that's the story for it. Cinnamon, how you doing? You're going to see Cinnamon all over the place in Volume 3 of the Torah's Life video series. Excuse me. And she actually embarrasses me one time. But we had a little talk about that, didn't we, Bear? So, all right. Shabbat Shalom. Have a wonderful, blessed, prosperous week. Shavua Tov. By the way, as we finish, some of you have emailed. You've been really blessed by the shofar of Yaakov Rice, a good friend of mine. Pray for him. He's going through a lot of health problems right now. As we start out, and we've had the Aaronic blessing by Lenny Harris. Well, this week I've got a special one for you. Some friends of ours, good friends of ours in Arizona, they've got a daughter. And that when I started doing putting the Aaronic blessing at the end, she decided that she wanted to learn it. And so they did a little video, and they sent it to me. And I got permission, and we're going to close today's Living Torah series with a little different Aaronic blessing than maybe you've ever heard before. So, Trinity, Kol HaKavod. More power to you. You did good, girl. It's a baby.
Adonai, penav vega egunega, shisa Adonai, penav vega, bayasem vega, vega, son. My bless you and keep you. My Yahweh make his day shine on you and be gracious to you. My Yahweh bless your countenance upon you and give you peace. Numbers 6:24, day 26.